Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
The trade in the NFL today. The Baltimore Ravens have an agreement in principle to trade former Super Bowl MVP quarterback Joe Flacco to the Denver Broncos. The trade cannot be officially processed until the league year begins on March 13th. When the deal is completed, it will likely be for a mid-round draft pick. Albert Breer of NFL.com says it'll be a fourth-round pick. That means that Baltimore officially commits to Lamar Jackson. It means the Broncos, who has the 10th overall pick in this year's draft, are addressing their biggest need before they get to the draft. Joe Flacco going to go to the Denver Broncos on March 13th. Yesterday, the Bills signed backup offensive lineman Spencer Long to a 3-year deal 1 week after he was released by the Jets. Long released by the Jets in a cost-saving maneuver picked up by the Bills. March 17th is the day when the Pittsburgh Steelers may have to make a move on Antonio Brown. That's according to NFL.com. They say the likely deadline for the Steelers potentially trading Brown is March 17th when a $2.5 million roster bonus is due. New Cardinals head coach Cliff Kingsbury may have said he likes Kyler Murray back in October, but now he says he's sticking with Josh Rosen as his quarterback. He says our feelings toward Josh have not changed or waned or anything. Kyler Murray, the former Oklahoma quarterback, announced 2 days ago he will play football instead of baseball for the Oakland A's, and the Arizona Cardinals have the first overall pick. Raiders have had their first talks about returning for one final season to Oakland. After the city filed suit over the team's planned move to Las Vegas, Oakland Coliseum's executive director says he met with the Raiders president last week about a lease for 2019. Buffalo Sabres last night beat the Islanders 3-1 at KeyBank Center. Jeff Skinner, Jason Pominville, Johan Larson scored for Buffalo. Sabres will practice tomorrow, then play the Rangers on Friday, the final game of Buffalo's 7-game homestand. Pittsburgh Penguins star Evgeny Malkin suspended 1 game by the NHL for an intentional stick swing. And St. Bonaventure's basketball team with a dominant 76-51 win over St. Joe's last night. For head coach Mark Schmidt, win number 202 with the Bonnies. That ties it with Larry Wiese for the program's all-time coaching wins record. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, we are motoring into hour number two of the show. Happy to have a familiar voice, a familiar name on the line with us. He started his NFL career here with the Bills, a draft pick out of James Madison, played with the Bills for 4 seasons, 2010 through 2013, then went on to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers. We've got former NFL linebacker Arthur Motes on the line with us as he gets into broadcasting in Pittsburgh. Arthur, John Murphy up here in Buffalo with Steve Tasker. How are you, buddy?
Man, I'm doing well. How have you been?
We're great. We miss you. We've missed you since you left
like
a couple years ago.
I miss y'all, too.
You were a great guest on the show. You were a very good player for the Bills, and really just a pleasure to be around. And I know you kind of carried that whole demeanor down there to Pittsburgh. You fit right in with the Steelers down there, didn't you?
Yeah, man. It was a smooth transition for me and my family. Just thinking about, you know, continuing my off-the-field work, my nonprofit stuff, everything was just a smooth transition. And ultimately, I was very fortunate for it to be like this because a lot of times it isn't that smooth. So, yeah, man, it definitely was good for me.
You got a chance to play for the Steelers. They've always been one of the stellar organizations in football. They've got 6 Lombardi trophies. And just this year, the Patriots in New England got their 6th Lombardi trophy. And as you look at the two of those organizations, who are you pulling? Who do you think, not pulling for, but who do you think will get the 7th Lombardi trophy? The Steelers or the Patriots, who'll get it first?
Yeah, so when I think about that, I personally feel that just because of how consistent New England has been over these past, you know, years, and the fact they still have Belichick, they still have Brady coming back, I feel that they will probably get to 7 first just because it can happen within a year or two. If you look over the past 4 out of the 5 Super Bowls they've played in, they've won 3 out of the last 4. But now, when I think of long-term, I do feel that Pittsburgh has the potential to win more down the line.
Why do you say that, Arthur?
Just, man, based off of the fact that with Pittsburgh, they won Super Bowls with 3 different quarterbacks. You had Chuck Noll win 4 Super Bowls. You've had Bill Cowher, and then you have Mike Tomlin win 2 as well. So when you think about 3 different quarterbacks, 3 different coaches, all have won Super Bowls, whereas in New England, it's strictly been Brady and Belichick. So outside of those two being together, we haven't seen them have that type of success before. So I feel that whenever that run does, and we know with Brady, as much as he says he wants to play till he's, you know, 45, 46, 47, I mean, his window is closing. We're looking at 2 to 3 years tops, from my personal opinion on it. So when he leaves, now that's a whole other dynamic, and I just haven't seen New England operate at that level of consistency like have they been with those two together.
I just got to ask you about that level of consistency. In recent years has been sort of the trademark, the hallmark of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and it wasn't there this year, Arthur. What happened to the Steelers in 2018?
Man, I feel like they just had a lot of stuff that typically, distractions that typically wouldn't affect them. I felt like it did. One thing that goes, I feel like didn't get mentioned enough was the Le'Veon situation, and not in terms of just the contract, but that feeling in the locker room, that feeling of, it divided it where you have some of the guys who are supporting him and understanding the fight that he's making as a player, but then you have the other guys who are looking at it from a management standpoint saying that, hey, you need to be here. You're the reason why we're not winning.
Yes.
So when you think about that divide, that really affected them more than they let on to. And then I just felt like as the year progressed, there was so many little things that would happen here and there. Also, the kicker this year, Chris Boswell, he struggled a lot this year compared to last year. And that was the difference in 3-4 wins easily.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point. It's not just always one thing. It's always a couple of things. And at the end of the year, the thing that grabbed the headlines was Antonio Brown. We've been talking here in Buffalo about his availability now that he has made it clear he wants to be traded from Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has stated they were really unhappy with the way he handled himself there at the end of the season, and it looks like they're going to come to a parting of ways. Is that how you see it transpiring in Pittsburgh? You think Antonio Brown has played his last down as a Steeler?
I do think he has, and this is why. As a player just in general, whenever you think of somebody who doesn't want to be a part of a team, somebody that doesn't want to be there, they want to be traded, released, whatever the reason is, if you keep that player, not only are you opening up a whole can of worms in regards to how they may act and the backlash that you're going to receive from that player, but then also you think about the players that are around him. After everything that's transpired throughout from week 17 up until this point now, if you're a guy in that locker room, you're like, well, this guy has clearly made it clear that he doesn't want to be here, so now I'm questioning how much is he really putting into this. I'm questioning, okay, if things start to get thick in the season, as it happens every year, you might lose a game or two here or there. Now I'm wondering, is this guy going to shut it down on me? These are all the things that play into effect all because of those comments that he's made and the way he's acted this offseason. So if I'm the Steelers organization, I feel that you have to move him, but you don't release him because he's worth too much. You have to trade him because you want some type of compensation back for him. But I feel that a fresh start is what's definitely needed for him. And I just feel like with the organization, I mean, the Steelers, they've been under they've been scrutinized a lot this year in particular. So I feel that that fresh start could also be good for them as well.
Art, I got to ask you this as well. Now, you were there in Pittsburgh for a number of years. You've played with Antonio Bryant, you've played with Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, what kind of guy was Antonio Brown before he was unhappy? What led to the point where Antonio Brown said, I am so done with this Steelers team? What happened?
Well, see, that's the funny thing. Nobody but him knows. And it's been times that he's hinted throughout this whole offseason about he's going to give an interview, he's going to publicly say his side because he felt that everybody was making him the scapegoat. Everybody was saying one thing, but that's not really the case, and he wants to get his side out. But at the Super Bowl, he said that some things are better left unsaid and it's better for business. So he said that he's not going to do an interview and not tell people. So honestly, nobody knows. But I can say this. When it comes to teammates, I mean, he was one of my favorite teammates just because outside of Week 17, you knew he was always going to show up. He was always going to give elite-level effort. And he was just a down-to-earth person. I mean, everyone sees the nice cars and the expensive clothes and things like that. But, I mean, he's a guy that he will joke with you and hang with you if you're a $100 million guy or if you're a practice squad player. He's still going to show you that love and just ultimately embrace you. So that's why I feel like a lot of the guys rallied around it. But, obviously, that was prior to, you know, him doing all this offseason.
All right, there is a question. And when we talk here in Buffalo about should the Bills trade for Antonio Brown, the issue is sort of how much does his late season meltdown in Pittsburgh, how much of that does he bring with him? And how does that impact the Steelers' ability to make a meaningful fair trade involving Antonio Brown? What do you think?
Well, that's a really good point. And I feel that, honestly, he's hurt his trade value a lot. I don't know if he's doing it directly or indirectly, but if you're another organization, some of the things you have to factor in are, yes, he has publicly been a headache. Yes, he has off-field issues. When you think about the speeding thing, and then also he has an ongoing investigation with a domestic dispute down in Florida. So those are other things you have to consider. He'll be 31 when the season starts. It's a lot that goes into it. So initially, if you're just taking it at face value, you would say, oh, yeah, you would definitely get a first-round pick for AD. But when you factor in all of these other things, you're like, hey, why would I give up a first-round pick when statistically showing when you get past that 31 mark, you're looking at maybe 2 to 3 years tops of like being that elite caliber at the receiver position. So with that being said, I'm saying anywhere between second and third round picks. But it really just depends on what else happens right now, because this is up to the day. But I mean, who knows in a week from now what else could come up or what else he could have done to hurt his value even more.
One of the things I also wanted to ask you, and you mentioned it early in our interview, was the toll that the Le'Veon Bell situation took on the Pittsburgh Steelers. You felt that was really a drag on them for the entire year. How do you think it – first of all, obviously Le'Veon wants to get paid and he wants some guaranteed money. How do you think that's going to affect his career, and how did it affect the Steelers this season?
So like I said, man, it definitely affected them a lot emotionally, even though they didn't want to hint to it. You could just tell with the demeanor of the guys in the locker room in their interviews. You look at how they were joking about things at training camp, but then as the season wore on, you could tell they were more irritated by it because, hey, we're losing, and you're asking us why this player isn't here when we know this player could be the difference maker for our team. Now, when I think about just how everything could potentially play out for Le'Veon, if he returns to Pittsburgh, I feel like his career still is on a high trajectory. He still can be successful. Now, he wouldn't get as much money staying in Pittsburgh, especially with James Conner emerging into a playmaker in this league. But I will say this, if he leaves, yeah, he'll potentially get more money, but I don't think the situation will be as good. I mean, here in Pittsburgh, while he was here, he had Ben Roethlisberger, who's a future Hall of Fame quarterback, Antonio Brown's future Hall of Fame receiver. He even got a season in with Juju Smith-Schuster, who's in another emerging star in this league. One of the top offensive lines as well. So everything was in place for him to be successful. Now, when you take him and you put him in, say, the Jets, for example, because they have a ton of cap space, or the Colts, those offenses aren't nowhere near the same level of the Steelers' offenses. And I feel like, yes, he could get more money going to those places, but his success would definitely take a hit because now you don't have all these other distractions on the field. They're keying in on you and only you. And that is a difference maker when you think about the matches that he was able to get and exploit out there.
We're on the line with Arthur Motes, former Bills linebacker. 4 years here, 4 years with the Steelers. You are out. Are you officially retired yet, Arthur? I know you're doing a little radio work down there in Pittsburgh. Is there any chance you're
So I haven't officially retired. Honestly, just taking this time to just kind of reevaluate my playing status and things like that, my health. Just also enjoying the family time. I mean, doing the media thing, and I thoroughly enjoyed it a lot. I was out in Arizona earlier this past season, ended up getting put on injured reserve, and that really gave me a time to just dive into the media aspect, do some radio stuff. So I'm just kind of, you know, enjoying this process right now. But as the offseason progresses, I'll definitely be making a decision sooner than later, and I'll go from there.
And in the last couple of years with the Steelers, you spent a lot of time on special teams. I'm wondering what you think of what the league has done with special teams, in particular kickoff. Sort of, you're out there trying to make a living, a lot of it on special teams work, and they seem to be pulling the rug out from underneath you sometimes.
Yeah, they are, man, and it's unfortunate, but I understand from a health standpoint. When you think about guys like me, and then honestly, I feel like 75% of the NFL is made up of guys who, yeah, they play some of offense and defense, but they also have a major role on special teams. When you start taking that element away from the game, that does affect the need for certain players on your rosters. But like I said, from a health standpoint, I think about just the AAF, the Alliance of American Football. They don't even have kickoffs anymore. And when you think about the leading causes of concussions in games statistically, it's on the kickoff play. Just because of you have, you know, a large space to run at, and you're hitting guys full speed, and all that plays into it. I do feel that the kicking game is still extremely important, though, and it still should be respected in some regard. I mean, obviously, Steve Tasker is a guy who's a legend special teams-wise, and he can attest to the impact he can have as a special teamer. But I just feel that certain aspects could still be tweaked without removing it completely from the game.
Yeah, it's interesting. The game does continue to evolve away from, you know, like the kickoffs as we knew them when we were growing up. It's going to be completely different. And now I wanted to ask you, as this season wound down, as the season's over, the Super Bowl was a couple of weeks ago. We've got, you know, we start to point towards the draft coming up, and you know the topic of the draft has turned out to be another quarterback, Kyler Murray. He says he's fully going to commit to the National Football League. He doesn't want to play baseball. And here's a guy who's, whatever height he is, 5'10", 5'9", 5'11", whatever it is, he's going to come in and probably be a first-round quarterback. What do you think about a guy, you know, passing on Major League Baseball, and what do you think about Kyler Murray and the decisions he's made and the ones he's got ahead of him?
Yeah, so like you said, it was a huge decision for him to walk away from baseball, being the 9th overall pick to the Oakland A's. But when I think about just from an initial thought process, there was no guarantee that he would make it to the majors. And the style of life that you live doing single-A, triple-A, and double-A ball, I mean, it's rough. You're taking the Greyhound bus to different games and stuff like that. You're sleeping in hotels that aren't, you know, the five stars which you're typically accustomed to seeing in the NFL or in the major leagues. So all of that plays into it, and it was only going to be $4.33 million guaranteed. Whereas in football, depending on how high he goes in the draft, if he's a top 15, top 10 pick, he's looking anywhere between $15 to $20 million fully guaranteed as a first-round pick. He's also going to go and become the star of that organization or the face of that organization right away, and you get all the glitz and glamour that comes with that. And that's just solely based off his draft selection. Now, when you think about the ceiling, we've seen what he can do in football. Heisman Trophy went extremely electric with the ball. And also the rules professionally are geared towards the quarterbacks. So he does have a more favorable situation with football, whereas in baseball, like I said, it's a ton of first-rounders that never make it to the majors in baseball. I mean, that's a common thing. You're not only competing with Americans, you're competing with people from other countries as well. So it's a larger talent pool. But obviously, when you think about longevity and money standpoint, hey, health-wise, football, you're going to get beat up, without a doubt. 100% injury rate is going to happen. Baseball, those guys play to late 30s, 40 years old. Football, you have to be a great player to get a $100 million contract, and it's not fully guaranteed. Baseball, if you're a great player, you're getting $200, $300 million deals fully guaranteed. So, I mean, it's just a lot when you think about it. But if his heart is truly into football, then I understand him making that decision, because at the end of the day, you got to do what makes you happy.
With former Bills linebacker Arthur Motte. Arthur, this past September, the Bills played a regular season game up in Minnesota, and we were kind of reminiscing back then. The last time the Bills played at Minnesota was a memorable game for you when you single-handedly ended Brett Favre's consecutive game streak, and the saying, "Don't cross the moats," sort of came out of that game and that hit, right?
Absolutely, man. I will never forget that day, man. That was an awesome day. The game after that hit didn't go as we would have liked. But still, man, it was an awesome experience, man. And ultimately, it's really what catapulted my career and started me out as far as becoming a name that people would know about and things like that. So, I mean, I definitely have very fond memories of Minnesota.
Yeah. Do people still say don't cross the moats to you?
Yes, indeed, man. It's something that I was able to actually, you know, carry over throughout my playing career when I transitioned to Pittsburgh as well. And always on social media, I'm still, you know, using that as like a hashtag just to keep people involved in what I'm doing and things like that. And I feel like just the reception, you know, through Bills fans and Steelers fans has always been awesome with the Don't Cross the Road. So, yeah, it's been really good.
Great stuff, Arthur.
Thank you, Arthur. Good luck to you no matter what you wind up doing. I know we'll stay in touch, and we thank you for spending a few minutes with us here today. Thanks.
Hey, no problem. I appreciate you guys.
It's good catching up with Arthur Motte, former Bills linebacker. 4 seasons here, 4 seasons with the Steelers, moving into the next phase of his career as he does a little radio, Steelers Nation Radio. Arthur joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline presented by Subway Restaurants, proud to be locally owned and operated. Interesting take from a former Antonio Brown teammate when he said, all this being said, he was a good teammate. We liked having him with us.
One of his favorite teammates.
Yeah.
He was
what do you make of that?
Listen, I think he is a former teammate and a guy who's wired into that locker room. Nobody knows why Antonio Brown did what he did. But the simple fact of the matter is, I think it comes down to that Antonio Brown made a decision that he was going to get out of Pittsburgh, and he saw his way clear to do that, doing what he's done in the last, you know, walking away from the week 17. And I'm and having said that, and Arthur Motes said it as well, he really he thinks, as we do, Antonio Brown really hurt his trade status and his value on the trade market by being a guy who is willing to make a decision of that type and follow through with it, no matter what the consequences are, no matter what the backlash is, no matter what it makes him look like. He's going to do what he wants to do. So every team that trades for him is going to have to ask themselves, what happens when he makes that decision for us and decides to do that? Because that's all it's going to take. And they're a one decision from a diva-type player away from being out all the assets that they traded for him.
Yeah. Antonio Brown, the topic of our Twitter poll today, it's a pretty good one. We've had good response. More responses coming up. Should the Bills trade for wide receiver Antonio Brown? You can vote on our Twitter poll. You can tweet in a response. You can give us a ring. Talk about it at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. On the poll, with more than 1,700 responses so far, should the Bills trade for wide receiver Antonio Brown? 43% say nope, he's bad for the locker room. 33% say yes, but make sure you don't give up a first-round draft pick for him. Not worth it. 14% say yes, trade for him, whatever it takes. And 10% say no, he won't be effective here. So if you break it down as you did earlier, Steve, 53% of our respondents to the Twitter poll say no, don't trade for him. And what, 47% say yes. That's pretty close. Really close.
It's an outstanding Twitter poll.
It shows.
I mean, it shows
there's a legitimate difference
of
opinion on this.
And I get it. I mean, and it's interesting, too. It's kind of a bell curve. Listen, say yes at all costs, and there's about the same percentage to say no, don't do it at all. He's not going to be effective. Now, this is a guy that's already been playing for a big number. I mean, he's already making a lot of money. And when he was playing for the Steelers, he was playing well. I mean, he's not a guy, and we heard his former teammate Arthur Most said, listen, when he's on the field, when he's at practice, when he's doing what he's supposed to do, he always brings a top elite effort. He always plays hard. He's always ready to play. He practices hard. He prepares to play well. So there's all those things in his corner, no question. And you got to think, at least for the first year you get him, that it would be that here. Or there, or wherever it's going to be. His next team is going to get a full effort from him. The question is, what happens when you get a full effort from him and it doesn't go as well as he had hoped? You know, what if it comes out and he's only getting one or two catches a game? He doesn't have those eight catch for 175-yard games with you. Is he going to shut it down? Because
he's done it before.
Exactly. Because the NFL is all about, you know, it's hard to be good, and you need help to be good. He's gotten a lot of help in Pittsburgh. He had Le'Veon Bell. He had Ben Roethlisberger. He had Juju Smith-Schuster. He had Martavius Bryant. He had a best offensive line in the NFL. He had all that stuff going for him as a wideout with a quarterback that could really sling it going for him. What happens when he goes to a team, and Arthur Motes brought it up, our guest a minute ago, what happens when none of that's there, or some of it's not there, and it doesn't go as well as it did in Pittsburgh? Is he going to shut it down? That's a big question, and it's a big risk for a team who's going to have to invest something into getting him.
We thank Arthur Motes for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Going to take a break. The other big story of the day, the Baltimore Ravens shipped off their quarterback, Joe Flacco, who won the Super Bowl for him, was the Super Bowl MVP. He's now headed to the Denver Broncos. We're going to talk with Andy Lindell, who is a KOA radio host in Denver, sideline reporter on the Denver Broncos radio network. He'll join us next to discuss that trade. Come on back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. Steve Tasker, John Murphy. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. Powering through the show, Steve. We're halfway through. How do you feel? You got
feel
enough
great.
Left in
I
you?
Got enough for a strong middle of the show before I kick it to the finish.
We're at the midway point of the show. The
that's right.
Halftime here at the show. Halftime. That's only the half of it. That's what Van used to say all the time. That's only the half of it, Murph. That is only half of the show. We got another half to come, an hour and a half to go, and some good guests coming up. Jenny Vrentas from from MMQB.SI.com will join us coming up next hour. Now, talk about this trade. The Ravens send Joe Flacco to the Denver Broncos. What's going on in this deal in Denver? On the line with us, the host of Primetime Sports on 850 KOA Radio in Denver, Broncos pregame show host. Happy to have Andy Lindell on the line with us. Andy, John Murphy, and Steve Tasker in Buffalo. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing okay.
We're doing great.
Scratching our heads about this trade. Is this an upgrade at quarterback for the Broncos?
Well, you know what? For the fans, they're reacting like it isn't. The town is not exactly accepting this well. I do a show that's all Broncos all the time, and so we got a media reaction from Broncos country, and it was pretty interesting to hear how little they cared for the trade, frankly, overall. I'd say 75% of the texts are negative that we were receiving. So, you know, look, I think it probably is. Now, you're going to have to keep Joe healthy, you're going to have to keep the pocket clean, and you're going to have to do a better job of protecting, you know, the quarterback, which has been an issue, frankly, since even pre-Peyton Manning days. So there's still some work to be done, but I do think I think things got a little bit much for Case last year. And I'll tell you this right now. I'm not positive they don't let Case go. As it was explained to us from Ian Rappaport, our NFL insider, and he does work on NFL Network, he basically said at this point the Broncos don't owe Joe any guaranteed money, so Flacco may be on a one-year prove-it deal because they could just cut him after this year and not have to owe him anything. So I think it's a pretty good situation, and I just think the Broncos are so hell-bent on fixing the QB. I could see him draft one. I could see him keeping Case and making all three just compete for the job.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do think Elway, and for as much criticism around football circles as he gets for, you know, having so many different quarterback moves in his tenure there with Broncos, he did win a world championship after bringing in Peyton Manning. The guy played the position, and he pulls the trigger on the quarterback more than any GM around the NFL. And I don't know whether it's a good thing or bad thing. It's bad because it's hard to find the right guy, but it's also good is you never know when the right guy might just trickle down to you. And I think going out and getting Joe Flacco, I don't know if you've seen him play very much. Listen, he throws it really well.
Hey, Andy, before you answer that, can you step in and mediate a dispute between my partner and I? I think it's a bad thing. Elway has swung and missed a couple of times on quarterbacks now. Case Keenum, Brock Osweiler, Paxton Lynch. How is that a good thing? Yeah, he's still trying. So what? You know, he's up there swinging and missing.
Yeah, I mean, you got to keep firing until you hit the target, don't you? It's not great as far as the one that really set him back is Paxton Lynch. I mean, that's where your big problem comes in, and it's kind of tied to the hip of Brock Osweiler, to be honest with you, because, you know, the reason why I think they ended up having to draft the Paxton Lynch was they thought they were going to get a deal done with Osweiler. I think they were maybe more confident than they should have been because, remember, they drafted Paxton shortly after losing Brock Osweiler to Houston. Yep. And I just wonder how in depth did they get in the scouting process coming off a Super Bowl, worried about the MVP candidate, you know, the MVP contract of Von Miller, the franchise tag scenario. They had all that stuff going on. You go ahead, you draft Paxton Lynch. I will say this, Paxton physically checked the boxes. The problem was, is we all came to learn, and we learned it pretty quickly, and maybe John should have accepted it a year sooner than he did. Paxton didn't study. Paxton didn't love football. Paxton, from what I understand, was maybe a little bit more worried about playing video games and getting in his playbook and working on his iPad and all that kind of stuff. So that's why that blew up in their face. But you guys, I don't have to tell you guys, anybody that's been drafting as high as our two franchises have been the last few years, until you figure it out, you're just kind of stuck, right?
Yep.
You got to keep taking swings until you figure it out. And when you miss on a first-round quarterback, it kills you. It kills you. You have to get the draft right. John always done it in other areas, but I think even with this Flacco move, he's still got to find a way to get the draft right and find a young guy. Or we'll see what happens when his contract comes up in 3 years. Maybe there could be some interesting times ahead for John if this doesn't get worked out.
Yeah, one of the things I was going to ask about this quarterback search that the Denver Broncos are continuing with this trade for Joe Flacco, what are some of the criticisms of John Elway and the guys that he has not taken advantage of? For instance, I mean, we all look at Patrick Mahomes going number 10 overall. A lot of teams passed him up. The Bills traded the pick to Kansas City. I mean, there's plenty of blame to go around, but guys like that, or maybe like a Teddy Bridgewater, who was a free agent last year, may be available again this year. All these guys that have come up, like Kirk Cousins, he didn't trade for him. You know, what are some of the, you know, the things that Elway's getting criticized for that he didn't take advantage of? What quarterbacks are they looking at and say, why didn't you get him? Why didn't you get that guy? Why didn't you get this guy? Because, you know, last year, Case Keenum was a pretty hot commodity.
Well, I would say this. He's not, like, when you bring up Patrick Mahomes, the Broncos had the 20th pick that year, and they ended up picking Garrett Bowles. So they never had a chance to really take him. They weren't in the top 10 in drafts for the last few years until finally the bottom came out in 2017, and they ended up having that number 5 pick. So as far as hot, sexy names, it's not so much that he's passed on those guys. Now, you know what? Dak Prescott. I think anybody that passed on Dak Prescott and the Broncos trade up, they supposedly were in some, you know, competition with the Cowboys to get Paxton Lynch. They trade up to get Paxton Lynch, and they pass on a Dak Prescott. And what is interesting about that is I've heard from some that Gary Kubiak actually liked Dak Prescott better than he maybe liked Paxton Lynch. So there's been some chat about that. Now, you know, has that ultimately been totally confirmed? It hasn't. But these are the little things you talk about. You know what's funny? What he gets criticized more for is his offensive lines. His offensive lines, if you look at it, have actually been the bigger problem longer than even some of the quarterbacks, which may be hard to believe. But, I mean, you go back to 2013 and the line that went to the Super Bowl. Well, at that point, you're down Ryan Clady, and he has a pretty bad foot injury, and you're not expecting him to come back. You got Chris Clark playing tackle. If you just go and look at our roster, and you were to just check through the last 5 or 6 years at the number of offensive linemen that have been shuffled in and out of there, the ones that, and even a couple of the ones that they could have hit on, and a Ty Sambrillo, who's doing all right in Atlanta, and it's funny because he's going to be in the, you know, Ty Sambrillo was perfect for the zone scene, going back to under new offensive coordinator, Rich Sambrillo. And you look at a Michael Schofield, who's now doing a decent job for the San Diego Chargers, and he cut Russell Okung after just one season, who, again, is now helping the Chargers at least make the playoffs and this year get to the divisional round. Those are more the things that he's getting criticized for. The quarterbacks, it's tough. He gets hammered for Paxton Lynch, but honestly, you know, look, he wasn't the one that gave the $18 million contract to Houston. He picked up Brock Osweiler after he came back for $500,000 bucks, and the reason why they lost Brock was they weren't willing to go any higher. So really, it's more what's befuddling, as you said, for a guy that played the quarterback position, is how tough it's been to put a decent offensive line together.
On the line with Andy Lindahl, he is host of Primetime Sports on 850 KOA Radio in Denver. You've mentioned, I think, Andy, that on your show today, what did you say, 70, 75% of the public opinion seemed to be against this trade for Joe Flacco. How do you account for that? What do you make of that? And this is a question about perception, too, by the way. I'm asking about the fans' perception here.
They just think he's broken, he's bad, he's whatever. That's what I keep hearing. There's a lot of injury concerns out there, and you know what? That's absolutely fair. The guy's had a hip injury, a back injury. Frankly, it was the injury that cost him his job against Lamar Miller or Lamar Jackson that allowed Lamar Jackson to show he was ready to take over the team, I guess, last year. So I get why the fans have some concerns there, but they want a young quarterback. They want their Patrick Mahomes. See, now Elway and the Chargers and John Gruden and the Raiders, everyone now gets to live in the same conditions John Elway caused the division for years, where the other, you know, the rest of your division sees this great young quarterback in Mahomes, and we all want one, right?
Yeah.
And so now John's got to find one. That's where a lot of this comes from. And the fans wanted someone drafted, which, you know, the fans I kind of laugh at. I mean, you're going to take a flyer on Drew Lock at 10. You're going to take a flyer on Daniel Jones at 10. You know, I would be interested in a Dwayne Haskins, but you can't tell me he's a can't-miss prospect. I don't know what to do about Kyler Murray because, as much as I love the kid's football skills, dude, you're 185. You know, I've stood on the sidelines. I've seen the hits that guys like Steve Tasker have taken. I'm standing next to former tight end Jeb Putz here. It's a mean game. I refuse to believe that you're going to survive at 185, and I don't know how much more weight you can put on that frame of yours. So right. Kyler Murray's a big mystery to me, and I wouldn't want to risk my number 10 pick there. You know, so the fans want a young QB, but to me, what Joe Flacco does, if nothing else, for the Broncos, and I'll give you a little bit of the company slant, but I believe this. If nothing else, you don't have to force a bad quarterback decision at 10 that we've seen so – I mean, look at the Browns. How many did they force that were bad before they finally hit on Baker Mayfield? Now they've got something to be excited about. If Joe Flacco stays healthy, likely you at least compete in this division. And I'll tell you this, I'm going to feel more comfortable with Joe Flacco trying to take on Patrick Mahomes when they meet for the first time next year. And I would have after watching Case, especially when you go to Arrowhead.
Where
we're at.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. A question about a young quarterback who was there, not a highly drafted quarterback, but Chad Kelly. Is he out of the picture for good now? Is there anything left for him in Denver, do you think?
No, there isn't, fellas. It's, I don't want to get into all of it, you know, but I'll just say there's some issues that still need to be worked out off the field there.
Okay.
The Halloween incident was not a good one. He got popped at a party. He walked into a house, gentlemen. Now, you know, look, you're in the Midwest here. There's a lot of folks that own firearms. I'll just be honest about it. There's many of us that feel Chad Kelly is very lucky he was not shot for entering a residence for what he did in Halloween. So he's got some stuff he's got to clean up. I think John was trying to help him. Unfortunately, I think the incident near Halloween kind of showed everybody that we've still got a ways to go. So, unfortunately, I just don't think he'll be back in the conversation in Denver. I wish him luck because, you know what, he seemed like a nice enough kid. A lot of us were intrigued by what he showed in the preseason. I know there's an attachment to Buffalo out there, but there's just got to be some stuff that gets worked out.
I'm sorry to hear
yeah,
that.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is if whoever, whether it's Joe Flacco or, as you say, maybe, I don't know if they keep Case Keenum on the roster, let these guys battle it out, whatever happens, Emmanuel Sanders is going to be one of the guys they may be throwing to. He's, the word is that he's ahead of schedule after a torn Achilles. Can he bounce back from an injury of that nature?
I believe he can bounce back. Now, here's a question that I can't answer. How effective can he be? You know what I mean? Because here's the thing about Emmanuel. Emmanuel was the explosion guy last year. Now, to be honest about it, guys, I really like Emmanuel, but E.T. doesn't get – Demaryius Thomas doesn't get enough credit for how many double teams he was eating up that allowed Emmanuel to be the more explosive guy. Once Demaryius Thomas left, and I'll just call him D.T. because that's what we know him as around town – he was handling the double teams, and all of a sudden Emmanuel got those, and that was one little thing that kind of slowed down the Broncos' offense. It was just performing moderately at best anyway. You know, then you lose a Phillip Lindsay, and everything just went right in the toilet. But I think Emmanuel can come back, but can he still be as fast as he was? Because I will tell you this, in training camp last year, one of the great mysteries that I can't figure out, and I just have to go back and blame a little of it on the offensive line, in training camp last year, Case Keenum was hitting guys dead in stride like we hadn't seen. And Emmanuel Sanders was showing great speed and ability. We thought he was going to be just a yards after the catch monster because of the pinpoint accuracy they were executing routes at, especially the ones over the middle. And then we got to the regular season and Case was off or he wasn't looking or, you know, again, I've seen it too many times at the offensive line. These quarterbacks get hit. They don't want to take anymore. It's what happened to Trevor Siemian because, frankly, I don't think Case was much more of an upgrade over Trevor Siemian. And now fans are wondering, is Joe going to be much more of an upgrade over Case? But it starts at the line. They've got to get a line that can keep a clean middle of the pocket. If they can do that, and if they can get – they probably need an upgraded tackle because they can't have Garrett Bowles holding every 5 seconds either, which is what seemed to happen on more often than not on the plays last year. But if they can get someone that can at least give Flacco a middle to step into, I do remember the big arm. I was on the field. I had to do post-game interviews with the guys after that Baltimore loss where I was sure Raheem Moore was going to pick the ball off when he broke, and somehow it floated over his head, and Denver found a way to lose their playoff game in 2012 here in Denver.
Yeah. So Corey Graham, right? Didn't Corey Graham come up with it? Yeah. Corey Graham came up with that pick, yeah, I think.
Hey, no, nobody came up with it. It went through
that's right. Yeah, that's true.
For the Ravens.
Yeah. Hey, one more question for you, and again, I'm sorry to interrupt you. A lot of folks in Buffalo, as they look at free agency starting next month, look at Matt Paradis, the center for the Broncos, as a possible fit here for Buffalo. Are the Broncos going to try to lock him down before he gets loose in a month, or what do you think?
I don't know. You know, you fellas know, again, you know how the NFL works. They want to, but they also want to hold his injury history against him. They want to be able to make him, you know, try to get him on the cheap. I've been told he can make as much as $10 million. I can tell you this. Matt Paradis, the man, is one of my favorite players that I've covered. He's a really good guy. He gets into the grumpy old offensive line mood every now and again, but always a guy that would stop and explain things to me. Even if he didn't want to be on the record, he'd still give you the courtesy of just trying to at least give you a spirited response to your questions so you at least understood better what was going on. He would ignore you. He's an absolute warrior of a player. Back in 2015 when they won the Super Bowl, the guy had two bad hips, and we knew the minute the season ended, he was going to get double surgery, which is exactly what ended up happening. He plays through injury. He's a strong guy. He's good for the locker room. He's a good leader, and he's going to be very high in demand, and I just don't know if ultimately the Broncos should keep him. I don't know if ultimately they will.
No, I'm really interested in him after hearing your description.
Yeah, I would tell you it'd be a hell of a signing. Trust me, it'd be good for Josh Allen. I can promise you that.
That'd be good. Hey, Andy, thank you. I promise I won't interrupt you anymore today. Thanks for being on the air with us today.
By the way, Mark Stout wanted me to tell you guys hello, too.
Oh, yeah. Say hello to Mark.
Yeah. Bill Stouter, we said hey.
Yeah, thanks.
Take care.
Andy Lindahl is the host of Primetime Sports on 850 KOA Radio in Denver, talking to us about the trade for Joe Flacco. Interesting, he said mostly negative reaction among Broncos fans about the addition of Flacco. What do you think?
No question, he's right. That you got to have an offensive line in front of Joe Flacco who can protect like an NFL offensive line. You can give him 2.5 to 3 seconds of time to throw the football. If you do that, Joe Flacco will win an MVP in the Super Bowl. I mean, that's how good he has been, right? So, but he has, because he hasn't had that offensive line in front of him. Now, one year he had a back injury. Then he had a knee injury. You know, it's something. The guy doesn't run well.
So he's going to get hit if you don't protect him. And that's been the issue the last couple of years. That's why Lamar Jackson got on the field this year at all.
More on the Flacco trade. More on our topic of the day. Antonio Brown, does he fit here? Should the Bills make a move for him? Give us a call. We're coming back with more. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Steve Tasker here until 2 o'clock. Jenny Vrentas from MMQB, SportsIllustrated.com, is going to join us coming up at 2 o'clock. Hey, been asking you all day, should the Bills make a move for Joe Flacco? Got a pretty interesting Twitter poll and some...
No, not Joe Flacco.
Oh.
Antonio Brown.
Antonio Brown. Those are the two names that I just screwed them up.
Yeah. Well, that Joe Flacco thing got dropped on our laps like 15 minutes before we came on the air.
Thank
and it was
God.
Like, oh, my...
Manna. It was exactly what we needed. Let's go to Bill in Brockport with a thought on the Steelers and Antonio Brown. Bill from Brockport, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess my take on it from what I've heard is that I don't put the onus on Brown so much as I heard that Roethlisberger can be a real pain in the neck. He's got talk show in Pittsburgh, and I guess he's very condescending and obnoxious. And, of course, everybody knows he's a woman, you know, a female abuser. He's been, you know, that's pretty well known. So I think that actually I give credit to Brown because, you know, like Motes was saying, he initially said he'd come out with everything and then he kind of backstepped a little bit and he said, you know, I don't know, some things are better left unsaid. So, you know,
do you give him credit for bailing on the end of the season?
Well, I consider that as being, you know, not throwing Roethlisberger under the bus. He could have done that.
He could have played.
Look at it.
Could have played. He could have kept his mouth shut and played, too, and he didn't.
Yeah, if he's going to keep his mouth shut anyway, you may as well play and keep your mouth shut, and then you don't make yourself a little bit of a pariah by coming off as being a guy who just bailed on the team, no matter what. I mean, if you're going to justify what Antonio Brown did because another player is a jerk, well, where's all the other players on the roster that are telling this other guy that he's a jerk? You got one guy who's saying it. Now, maybe those guys, all the other guys on the team think it but don't say it, or they're willing to live with it, and Antonio Brown has reached his limit for whatever reason. Why is Antonio Brown the guy that reached his limit and nobody else did? You know, so you can say what you want about Ben, and I've heard that stuff too, and we all know Ben Roethlisberger early in his career had all kinds of struggles. Well, you know what? I haven't heard too much from him for a decade. So I don't know whether you can go back and now and kick all that stuff up in his face and say, hey, you're not the guy you think you are or whatever. Why is it only Antonio Brown that's saying that? Why isn't it everybody else? You know, why does Antonio Brown get a free pass to, you know, make a stand of the nature that he did? I don't have a problem with him standing up to Ben in a locker room or off the in private. And I don't have a problem with him going to the front office and saying, listen, I'm out of here because of Ben. But you better trade me right now. But you don't do it publicly in the manner in which he did. That's a bad, bad move. And so all that stuff you say may be true, but that still doesn't mean Antonio Brown handled it well and should get credit for it instead of blame, because it was a bad thing he did.
Thank you, Bill. We got a break here. We got Jenny Vrentas from MMQBSI.com coming up next. We're going to talk a lot about Kareem Hunt. Of course, more about Antonio Brown, and we'd like to hear from you as well. Well, I'm back. Hour 3 coming up, One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.